You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Greg.
And I'm Veronica.
And this is the Wheel of Time chat. Nope. Damn it, sorry.
I think all you right, should keep it in though.
I'm sorry. And this is the Wheel of Time cast.
Hold on. Well, that got me. Okay. This week we're covering The Wheel of Time, Season 3, Episode 3, Seeds of Shadow.
So there was a lot to pay off for book readers in this episode.
Yeah.
A couple of very significant ones. And then some other things that were not as obvious. They were not ones that really... they're basically kind of like what I talked about as far as like Nynaeve and Lan and whatnot, stuff you didn't see. You didn't get a lot of the stuff going on in this episode. And it is awesome to, it's like seeing the stuff fleshed out, and I think it's great. I love it.
Cool. I think as a non-book reader, it felt like, okay, we're getting some story progression, but I wasn't like... wowed by this one. I feel like the same way I was the last two, but I'm still excited and still I think I'm hopeful that next episode that we get some big exciting things happening. I think we will.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mid-season finale or whatever.
Yeah,
even though it's only like 2 weeks into the season being released, it's crazy, but right. I imagine that you're right. I imagine that we will. But all right, so why don't you hit us with the Amazon summary?
Okay, so Amazon says, Nynaeve and Elaine are given a deadly mission, which I think is what they said about them last week. Perrin learns the consequences of his rage, which I question slightly. And then Lanfear begins to play a dangerous game, which I also question, hasn't she been playing a dangerous game this whole time? So... again, disappointed in Amazon's description. I get that they're trying to not spoil anything, but a little silly. Yeah. Let's hear.
The episode twos was actually pretty like, okay, yeah, I can see where they were coming from with those, and I can understand where they're coming from on these, but it's just super misleading.
Yeah.
So my summary, and I feel like I'm Amazon, like getting into Amazon. Style now, more Forsaken are revealed. Nynaeve and Elaine investigate to find Leandrin. Perrin works to fortify his people to protect them. The Black Aja make a stronghold in Tanchico. The Red Aja plots to regain their former strength and position. Rand and company discover more about the Aiel culture and politics, and Matt rediscovers his inner badass.
Very nice.
I think you kind of like you kind of hit it. I can see where show only people would be like, okay, like this is the story you're telling, and you're laying more groundwork, and we get more characters. I feel like they're trying to only introduce them like one or two at a time, and I think they're probably combining some characters so that there aren't as many as there are in the books, because I mean, right now you've probably got, I'd say 20 headliners, like main characters, depending on how you look at it.
It's a large cast with a lot of complicated names. Like, the amount of times that I'm pausing to be like, is this someone's name? Is this a new place I'm learning about? Or is this the name of a strange item that I don't understand that has a weird name? Like, it is a dense show for sure. And yeah, they introduced even more characters this episode for sure.
Yeah, it's like, and again, like, I do like that we are like kind of getting some of the same characters, like seeing the continuation of arcs, and then we're twisting apart, and then we're combining different combinations of characters.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm loving it. And as I said, I can see where show only people would not be as excited, because obviously you don't necessarily know what's coming and you don't know what to be excited about.
For sure.
All right. So how about your questions?
Okay.
What do you got?
My first question is, can you remind me, like, what we know about the origins of the Forsaken? Like, I just don't remember. Like, I know they're the big bad people that are closest to the Dark One and seem to be very involved with the Dragon Reborn each time. And they seem to be immortal and quite, quite powerful. But, like, why are they immortal? And what exactly are they? Did they used to be humans? Like,
so I will say, so I will do some of the stuff is stuff they've talked about. Some is just like kind of my own personal thoughts on stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say the Forsaken are basically the Dark One's generals.
Okay.
They are the ones who would be most likely for him to like speak to, but it'd kind of be like God speaking to you, right? It'd be like maybe destroy your brain if he didn't protect you from the sound of his voice.
Okay.
So if you wanted to like compare it to maybe Christianity, where I don't remember Alan Rickman's name in Dogma, but he was the voice of God, because you know, he was the one who would pass messages on from God to individuals, to humans, so that they wouldn't be destroyed by the sound of God's voice.
Okay.
And so these are basically his top, as Moiraine said, his like top lieutenants or his top generals. He gives them ideas of like an idea, or maybe he only speaks to one, right? Because it sounds like Ishmael was Nablus, who would be the leader of the Forsaken. And that's who the Dark One would speak through.
Okay.
So the other Forsaken had to like kind of trust that. They were people. They were channelers. They were able to access the One Power. And some were strong, some were not. Some were kind of like our main characters. Some were prideful. Some were, you know, whatever. And each of them had their own reason for joining the Shadow, whatever that may be. So that's kind of, and like back in the War with the Shadow, or the War of Power, or whatever it was called 3,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
These were the ones, like, they're the ones who have been alive since then. And that extended life, they were trapped in the seals, which basically kind of like what Luthien told Ishmael at the end of last season. Like, you're not really asleep, but you're not really awake. Like, you're awake, but you don't like feel anything. So you're almost like, in my opinion, you'd almost be like driven mad by, you know, 3,000 years of imprisonment.
So in previous, like, there's been more than just these two cycles of the dragon, right? Like, this happens over and over. So in previous iterations, would the Forsaken have died and been churned back out by the wheel potentially?
I think the reason that
these Forsaken are immortal and have been around for 3,000 years is because of being trapped,
Right. I think that the idea would be that the reason that they are like so long lived is just like Aes Sedai, they live for a long time, okay. But the reason that they have all the knowledge of 3,000 years ago is that they were trapped, and now that they are set free, they are given extended life by the Dark One or additional powers or whatever.
Okay. That makes sense. All right. Next question.
Yep.
Who is the false dragon that they keep referencing? He's not someone we... Is he someone we've met before?
Like, we have not seen him before. Okay. Mazreen Tain.
Yeah.
In Saldea. Yeah. So this is a... Mazreen Tain is another false dragon, very similar to Loghain. Apparently he can channel... I guess part of it is that like people would claim to be the dragon, but like not even be able to channel. I don't really know why. Maybe it's like a political following, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. But you know, because of you know this, that, or the other, like oh, this one can actually channel. I know they said that a number of times in either the books or in the show. But no, we have not seen him. All we've heard is reference to him. And he's in the books. Okay. So that's what I'll say.
Okay.
It's so not like just some random person they're sending people after.
Somewhat related to that. Twice in this episode, there's talk about hunting either the dragon or the false dragon. And both times, you know, they're talking about the red Aja, and they specifically both times mention sending 8 sisters. So the first time it says a party of 8, the next time it's a directive to the highest chair to take herself plus 7 sisters. So is there a reason that they're specifically choosing 8?
So I can't guarantee this, but so my thoughts are that in the book, if you had 13 Aes Sedai or people who could channel, no matter how weak they were, how inexperienced they were, whatever, all 13 of them linked could gentle or still a power channeler. In the books, there were also 13 Forsaken, which might have been like the reason that there were 13. So that if you had to, so that they could all cover the dragon or the dragon reborn or whatever, they could take care of him, take him out if they all banded together to work. My guess is that there are only 8 Forsaken. So my guess is that the number of people necessary to, you know, hey, you can overtake people no matter what, is 8, if that makes sense.
Does Ishmael count as one of the 8?
Yes.
And he's gone, so we technically just have 7 to worry about that we know of. Okay. Cool.
Does that answer your question? 3 questions.
And yeah, I think that's an interesting parallel. That there were 13 Forsaken in the book, and that it was a, you know, 13.
Yeah, that number was changed to 8, and mm-hmm. then the number of Aes Sedai required is changed to 8. I feel like they are linked. I'm sure that they will address why they send 8 sisters after, like, but if you're, hey, the question came up, so I don't feel bad answering that.
Cool.
I think it also is cool, because I think it does tie to the number of Forsaken as well.
Yeah, very interesting. You want to take a break, and then we will come back and jump into points?
Sounds good. See you in a few. All right, and we are back. We're going to go ahead and get into our points. So we have, you know, again, we've kind of like made 6 points to talk about. But Veronica, how about you go ahead and pick the first one?
Yeah. Can we just start with the cold open, which was like the reveal of a lot of the Forsaken?
I am totally down with that. I just want to say that they are almost artistic in the cold opens. Think about the things we've seen in the cold opens. Like, we saw Rand's birth, mm-hmm. like We saw the Aiel for the first time, like in action in his mother. We saw the Ishmael releasing Lanfear. We saw the dragon in the Amarylline seat before he went to go try to seal away the Dark One. We saw Ishmael and the dragon, like as Ishmael was getting imprisoned, and all of these are given to us with after context so that we understand more, and with like leading up to, so that if you go back and you watch the next like however many episodes and then you go back and watch it again, it almost hits you with like a different light. I think they do a phenomenal job. They get like what the entirety of the opening battle in episode one.
Oh my gosh, the entire, yeah, was all the cold open. Battle.
Yeah. All of Nynaeve's the beginning of the Arches, like until she walked away with Lan, I believe all of that was like at the beginning of the episode, yeah, or before she went in, and then when she and Lan like ran, walked away, that was when the title card came up, and it's like, oh my god. I do notice that, like, I think last season they had mentioned that they were like, hey, like, we want to give you more show, so if we can save 3 minutes. But I did notice that a couple of times this season they've actually had the whole intro.
But each episode is still though.
But they're long episodes, and I think people are just like, I don't care. If I'm gonna like it, I'm gonna like it. And that's the way that it is. But yeah, so let's talk about the Forsaken.
Think like get the first like big thing off the table, which is the reveal that Gabriel, who now this explains all the weird interactions that happened last episode, that I was like, you know, why did Liane like do that weird pause, almost like she didn't know who she was introducing, but then when she introduced him seemed like he was an old friend, and it's like, oh, because like she legit didn't know who he was when he first walked in. And then he is so powerful that he immediately like charmed an entire room of Aes Sedai into believing that they knew him. Queen Morghese thinks she's been with him for 10 plus years, as obviously does Elaine, who has a fabulous rapport with this man.
Yeah.
And he's just recently popped up into their lives.
You've only been free a month and you've already got a queen in your bed?
Yeah.
You're an artist with compulsion. And you're just like, man, it doesn't feel like compulsion would be like, hey, I'm going to make them do something or make them believe something. But like, he has an entire backstory that he just like loads into someone's head the instant that he sees them.
Yeah. And on top of that reveal, we find out not only is he like a double crosser, but he's a double crosser, because not only is he Gabriel, who we all thought was great jovial guy last episode, not only is he revealed as the Forsaken, he's pretending to do something with Lanfear and at least four others to take down Mogedion. I can't say any of these names. Mogedion.
Yeah.
And then at the end of their meeting, out comes Mogedion, and they're in cahoots. So he is double dirty. Don't love it, but very interested. So scary the amount of power that he has. How do you defeat that?
Yeah, well, the way that Mogedion was like looking at him, whatever. I'm like, is he using compulsion on her? Does she feel like she's protected? Does Lanfear feel like she's protected? Can Semael see Weaves? Like with someone like that, you can't have any you can't know if your thoughts are your own.
Yeah,
and that's just bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that I agree that so Gabriel is Raven. So if you guys didn't, I don't remember if they, I said his name. So yeah, Raven is his real name, and Gabriel is his persona.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones that we met or the other one that we met was Samael, mm-hmm. From either, I think from basically from Scotland.
Yeah.
And he and Lanfear definitely like had it out for each other. And then the other ones mentioned were Grandel, something like that, and Simiraj.
Yeah.
And that means that we have heard of Ravan, Samael, Lanfear, Malkedian, Grandel, Simiraj, and Ishmael.
Yep. So we're just missing one. Which means
we're missing one. We're actually missing six from like the book. So I'm like trying to figure out which of the other six it is.
Have we had any clues about like,
I don't,
how there's not been anything really, right?
There's been talk by some of my friends who've read the books and watched the show, and they're like, oh, I think it's going to be this one. I think it's going to be this one. I'm like, ah, man, like it's tough because each one, I would say that there are like three that I'm like, I could totally see it being this one or so totally see it being that one. Because there were a few that were like not as significant or didn't have as big a part to play. But I'm glad that we've seen all, at least seen four of them. Yeah, four of them. And then obviously Ishmael. And then, so we saw a couple other things there, right? We heard about Nablus. So that's the leader of the Chosen, the Forsaken. And then I'm going to say the other interesting thing was you saw them basically just appearing. You saw that the way that they could teleport effectively. And in the books, that's called traveling. And it is very interesting. But I like how different symbols showed up when like Lanfear did it and then Samael did it. And like they made like different motions with their hands or whatever.
Yeah.
So one was with Sidar, one was with Sidon, unless there's something else there that that we're not familiar with. So how do you feel about the Forsaken? Do you have other stuff you want to mention?
That was all I had to say. I mean, they are being real slow about sort of revealing the Forsaken and, you know, things about them and what they can really do.
That's the way it was in the books too.
Cool.
Makes
them a lot more ominous.
Yeah. When you are waiting for something, like every time you see the one of them show up, you're like, oh, what's going to happen now? Am I going to learn something or am I just watching them be horrible people?
Yeah.
Okay. So if that finishes off the Forsaken, like I'm going to go through, and this is going to be a longer one, Elida and the Red Aja.
All right.
So I have a whole mess of notes about this, and I can kind of boil it down, I think, but okay. I want you to kind of maybe call me on something.
Nope. I'm only going to be quiet during this point. Sorry.
All right. So it seems to me that Elida is one trying to figure out what's going on in the tower in general. For herself as well as for Morghese.
Yep.
Two, she wants the Red Aja to restore itself to the strength and power and kind of dignity that it had when she was the highest, which was greater than 20 years ago, because we saw her help Morghese win her succession war. Mm-hmm. Three, my guess is for a power grab for herself. Like she suggested replacing Sutama as a sitter because she's being taken, you know, sent off to find Mazrim Tame. She, like, it was absolutely insane to me that she's like, hey, men, I know you're a seer. Like, hey, you know, the truth is a heavy burden. But I know that you're supposed to be, you know, keeping an eye on me and reporting everything I say, but can you possibly keep this one thing that is absolutely bonkers and like, hey, the Red Aja is going to make a power grab. Swan's going to lose. And then we're going to go cage the Dragon Reborn. Like, that's a huge thing to not say to someone that is... like.
It felt to me...
I just don't get it.
I mean, if... there was no reason for her to upset it unless she, in fact, wanted Min to take it back. Otherwise, it was a really poor choice for exposition so we would know what was going on.
Yeah, I just didn't, unless she was trying to frighten Min away. Maybe that was the other possibility. But, like, I just like, what is happening? Like, it's not like, oh, hey, you know, I'm seeing some man or I'm whatever, right? Hey, this is just personally embarrassing for me, but yeah, like to me, it's like she's asking Min, she's saying, hey, Min, go tell them this, and I don't care if you do because everything's going to go down exactly as I see it anyway. I don't know.
It was strange to me for sure, and... what is the deal with the red bracelet? Is that why her hand is shaking? I wasn't sure in the first scene if the bracelet had anything to do with the handshake and like knocking everything off the vanity. But then when at the beginning of that conversation with Min, she does admit the bracelet is special, but she doesn't really say why.
Yeah, it's part of a foretelling, sort of. And so foretelling is like... it's kind of what we saw, and I think we might have talked about last season. Guitar Sedai made the foretelling, like, they almost, like, say, like, this is a foretelling. This, I have the gift of sight. And, like, they have to, like, say that before each time they have a foretelling or whatever. And I do understand where she's coming from with regard to the idea of, hey, don't just, like, sit by and let it happen. Like, take advantage of it. Now, if you see someone is gonna die, then... I don't see how you can really take advantage of that. If you see that Matt is hanging, you're like, oh, you know, use it to your advantage. Well, how the hell do I use Matt hanging to my advantage? Like, what the hell is that? Like, I feel like it doesn't apply. Sure, a very broad foretelling of the, you know, the Queendom of Andor will have a significant role in the last battle. Yes. Okay, yeah, that's broad enough and not specific and not like one particular action.
But also like but almost too broad to really sees. Be helpful. It's sort of like, okay, this big major army will have an important role in this big major battle. Ooh, surprise.
You know? Yeah. So, well, the other part to it is that I think that prophecies and foretellings, they almost like set you up to fail, yeah. Right? So... kind of like we talked about, I think in episode one, where Moiraine took Rand to the Eye of the World so that he could defeat the Dark One, which then gave him the Sangreal that like, you know, way inserted his power and like amped up his power. And then that's how Ishmael was. So basically she made it happen. And by trying to prevent whatever it is.
And we saw how Min's visions last season were misleading, you know, and kind of could have led you to make assumptions that, you know, Matt was bad, even though, like, what you saw him doing was not related to, you know, so.
Yeah, she doesn't see, like, a scene-by-scene thing. She sees...
a moment in time.
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not even a moment in time.
Because a potential that was, like, moment
that
in
was,
time.
You know, that was Matt stabbing Rand, not throwing a spear at him.
Yeah.
There was a very definitive difference between what Min sees and what actually happens in those truth-telling moments. So it's a little, you know,
gotta be careful.
It's hard to take advantage of that. Yeah, absolutely. And like we said, like prophecies really set themselves up for, you know, for craziness anyway. The fact that Elida like called out Sutama for not fighting for the seat that she had earned as a sitter, I was like, that's actually a valid point. Like that's
it is, and she's ballsy. I guess she's a powerful lady who's been used to wielding that power.
Yeah. She did say that a blue sister once told me, you know, pay attention to who the servants are in your rooms. then find out why they were placed there. It makes me wonder who the Blue Sister was.
Yeah.
And I feel like that person will possibly either come back or be named later. Mm-hmm. And then she is going to, you know, she tried to get Sutama to go and put up a vote for, to go cage Randall Thor. But then preemptively, Swan sent Sutama to go do the Mazrim Tame. So I feel like, and then I'm glad we already talked about the seven sisters, eight sisters. Yeah. I do think that she was pretty ballsy threatening Lyanna and Varen. Cross me now and I'll never forget it.
Right?
I was like, yeah. That, I mean, this woman has some presence. This actor has some presence. Yeah. And I know you had mentioned her like voice. Gravelly voice yeah. beforehand. And then apparently there's been some like feedback where it's just like super distracting or something like that. And I can appreciate that. Having said that, like right now, like watching what she does, I guess maybe I've become used to it. And it's to me, it almost like increases her gravitas.
I think it's so like, too. Like, especially this episode, it felt more appropriate as we learn more about her character. And I feel like they're setting her up to be this obvious sort of like bad character. And like, I feel like I almost suspect her too much and that like, I don't actually think she's bad. Like, I was sitting there thinking, like, if you're of the Red Aja and you've also been away from the White Tower and out of things for a while, like, her intention to go, like, one, restore the standing of the Red Aja in the tower, as well as wanting to go hunt down the dragon and disagreeing with Swan in the fact that they're not, I think it's all like pretty reasonable. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and so I think like she's strong and abrasive, but I don't think she's necessarily like wrong. I don't think we know what is right or wrong in how to deal with the dragon, right? And so I don't know. I was just, at first I really disliked her and suspected her, but then I was like, I think they're just trying to make me suspect her. And, like, maybe she actually has good intentions. They're just not in line with the way Swan is hoping. The people
that
we are. Yeah.
That we have come to root for. That doesn't mean that our people,
like, you know, it's a gray area on what you do with Rand, right? Right.
So I do want to address something, though. So we saw when Swan and Moiraine were there for the foretelling. That was 20 years ago. And then we saw last episode, it was 20 years ago that Morghais was put on the Lion Throne, which means that it was after that that Swan went to, like, was elected as Amyrlin or assigned or whatever as Amyrlin. And Elaida came back to challenge her for the Amyrlin seat. Because she almost beat out Swan for assignment as the Amyrlin. So it makes me wonder, like,
could it have been the reverse though? Like,
what do you mean?
Oh no, I guess not.
Because Swan was definitely not the Amyrlin 20 years ago, because it did say 20 years ago when we saw that. It did say 20 years ago when she put Morghais on the throne. And then I feel like after that is when Swan and Moiraine started plotting for Swan to become the Amyrlin seat. So it had to have been, I would say, a number of years after that. Huh. So it makes me wonder, when was Swan brought up as Amyrlin? And then, like, how did Elaida, who had been like in Andor this whole time, how did she like almost beat out Swan? I'm interested to see past, like, I could totally see like a prequel, like in the prequel, the White Tower.
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool to hear more about, but that's all of the stuff that I had as far as Elaida and the Reds.
Same.
Okay.
Do you want to just move into talking about the other things going on at the White Tower with Nynaeve and Elaine and Matt? So we get this really cool scene of Nynaeve and Elaine questioning the Black Aja that they have captured, and they're trying all these tactics, and they acknowledge, like, I guess at the end of all of it, they sort of realize, like, they were probably just being lied to the whole time, and that it was probably all a waste. But they try to be really badass. They get these two Black Aja, Amako, who is the lady who's, like, crying at first, and they're like, can you cut it out? And she finally dries up and is like, oh, okay, I'll tell you about how the Black Aja work in groups of three called hearts, and we knew the three of us plus, like, one person outside of our heart. And the person I knew outside of my heart was Landrin, and I know she's going to Tyr to help a Forsaken pull the Sword of Kalendar, which immediately they're like, well, that doesn't make sense, because we know no one but the dragon can pull the sword. Okay. And then Joya, they finally break, and she says Landrin is going to find the false dragon and Saldir, Mandarin Tyne, who we talked about. And so basically they realize all that has been for naught, right?
I'm just going to say that I am kind of laughing at all of your pronunciations.
Oh, they're so bad. I'm so sorry.
No, so Mazreem Tame. You said like Mandarin Tyne or something like that.
Oh my gosh, I had literally written down Mandarin Tyne.
Yeah, Mazreem Tame, okay. or something like that.
I think Tyneem sometimes I like don't that. Take a lot of, like, I'd pause on a lot of them, but sometimes I don't because I'm like, oh, I won't actually say this out loud and Greg will say it and it'll be fine. But I need to, like, put those in italics so that I don't have this moment where I try to read
that
it.
That was just really funny. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Okay. So, I don't really understand what took them from questioning these women to being like, oh, yeah, I knew where Landrin was keeping her elderly son. Let's go look there.
I think,
like, why wasn't that an original thought that, you know, this very important piece of things about Landrin?
Yes, I know. I don't necessarily disagree with you. But I think it was almost like a natural thing. Like, hey, I know that Varen and the Amyrlin really want us to focus on Joya and Amako.
Yeah.
Because the answer is in their heads. Go get it. And so they're like, okay, so this is like, yes, we're looking for Leandrin, but we're also trying to see if they can know the name of their black sisters in the tower, or we can, you know, get some other information, or is there something we're not even thinking about that they know about? So yes, I agree that their heads are full of knowledge that could absolutely be useful to the Aes Sedai. But I think that they kind of hit a wall. And then that was when Nynaeve was like, okay, well, we've kind of done what the Amyrlin told us to do. So let's go ahead and go try this other lead that I happen to have because I happen to follow her in this one particular time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's kind of like the thing that bugged me was, like, oh, they didn't mention any of the objects that they were stolen. Like, you haven't been looking through the objects? What are you talking about? How? And there are literally just, like, sheets and sheets and sheets of stuff that they took. And, like, oh. And I think it is, like, a little hard to believe that just because they were familiar with the Adam, or Adam, or however they call it, they figured out, oh, yes, like, we figured out precisely her plan. They stole 40 objects, but we pinpointed the one that looks like she's looking for a collar for this. I'm like, I feel that's, like, I don't really like that.
Yeah.
I didn't particularly care for that.
It was, to Kayla. Because it got them to where they needed to go.
I just feel like, you know, super, super lucky.
It was definitely a lot of, like, what felt to me like fast-forwarding through things that would have taken them a lot of time to search, right? Like,
right.
Like, they do go to the place where Leandrin used to keep her son, and they find that, like, symbol under the bed, and we immediately fast-forward to a scene of her finding the matching symbol in a book, right? Like, right. That was
which, awesome. I mean, yeah, like, that, absolutely, like, that I understand, right? Like, oh, hey, we looked through 400 books before we found this, and it's been 2 weeks, but, you know, like, that's boring stuff. But then it was just, to me, it was just absolutely insane that it was just like, we happen to put the pieces together with all of the, it's like you found, like, in a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle, you found, like, 12 pieces that happened to line up directly together. And, oh, I figured this out.
Yeah.
A little bit of suspension of disbelief. Maybe a lot, but you know what? Hey, like, sometimes you got to make jumps in order to like move plots forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say that I was just like, that bugged me. I was just like, oh, that's really weird.
So did you notice the gray man when they were going to, like, I thought he was going to attack them while they were out in town going into the room where the son had been, because he was behind them then.
On second or third watch, whichever watch it was, I was like, why didn't he? Like there's, you had to wait for them to find the special thing. Like, he's in this area right now. So, like, why not just kill them then? And I don't know who the target was. I don't know if it was Nine Native again or if it was Elaine. Because Elaine was the one who was hit. I guess it was a crossbow bolt.
Yeah.
Hit, like, grazed in the side of her head. And then, you know, Elaine whips her out. And then I did find the wording weird with Varen. She never wondered who stabbed him. Well, like, is that a question that you would ask when you saw a dead gray man with two, you know, of the strongest, you know, novices are accepted out there? Like, what's, she never wondered who stabbed him. So that means she stabbed him. And so we're not going to be safe until, I feel like you're jumping to conclusions.
I wish that what they had done is before Varen walked up, they acknowledged that he'd been stabbed. I wish that timing of things had been shuffled slightly, so they said it in front of her, acted surprised. It was apparent to her that they had not stabbed them, and she still wasn't curious about it. Then I would have been like, huh, that's weird. I agree, Nynaeve. But the way that it played out, I agree with you that it felt like, well, was it that strange she didn't ask? Did she know it had been stabbed? Like, you know, it was just sort of strange, and I just think, like, a slight shift in the way that they did the scene would have made me buy more that it was suspicious.
Right.
But once they pointed out and called her out for being suspicious, I am suspicious of her for a few reasons. One, like, I think using Min to spy in the White Tower is weird. She's the one who set that up. I also think it's very interesting that she got hit with the same, like, spell,
thing and her memory and is
intact. So that's all very, like, interesting and suspicious to me. And so now I don't trust Varen either. But who knows? It feels like this has turned into a giant, like, murder mystery,
I mean, can you imagine being in that situation where you literally don't know who you can trust?
Sucks.
Like it's not like a murder mystery in, like, a theater where you're like, oh, anybody could have done it. No, literally anyone could kill you at any given time. Yeah. Also gray men that you're not supposed to notice.
Yeah. And everyone's very, very powerful. Don't like that.
Yeah. It's just, I do not envy any of those positions, any of the people in those positions.
No.
So yeah, I will say that I did like I liked the fact that they addressed that like Elaine addressed not to Nynaeve about like, you know, you kind of liked the Elandrin, didn't you?
Yeah. Well,
I thought that she was trying to help me. I thought, you know, yeah, she was trying to recruit me for the dark, but like
it's because she thought that's what's right.
Yeah. Hey, she suffered and she, you know, she really, you know, she tried to help me. And I will say, and I'm going to pick Tanchico for our next point. I liked the fact that they like acknowledged it. Yeah. And they acknowledge that there is some respect there for Leandrin from Nynaeve, given that they both kind of went through the same thing. Like, Leandrin had a son that she lost, and Nynaeve had a daughter that she lost in the Arches. Like, she had an entire life with her 6, 7, 8-year-old daughter and lost her. So you can kind of empathize a little bit.
Yeah. One of the things I was watching a few minutes, I didn't get to watch the whole thing of like the little after show for this episode. And this is actually one of the points they were discussing and just in general, sort of talking about how even sort of the characters that play more of the villain roles in this series are still complex characters where you can see them as like a whole person who is not just, it's not black and white. Like, there's lots of gray area. And even if you disagree with their actions, you can possibly have empathy for the path that led them there, right? And Leandrin is such a good example of that. And, you know, what we see in this episode, I think what we knew of her already pointed to that. But this episode, like, really, I think, drove that point home with her that she is a complicated person. So I think that's a cool thing about this series. I think any good villain is complicated and not just one-dimensional. So pretty cool.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, outside of, you know, them leaving for Tanchico, I think we've covered all of Nynaeve and Elaine.
Yeah.
I kind of want to, like, talk about Matt.
Yeah, let's do Matt and Min, I guess. Or do
let's,
you want
to? Let's just tie it all together. Yeah. Because, I mean, so Matt and Min, like, Matt didn't have much to do. He basically was just like, hey, you know, oh, Min, you're bugging me. Like, oh, you still suck. And she's just like, no, I get it. I suck. But, like, I am trying to work on some stuff. And he's like, oh, my God, like, just cut it out. And then she sees the vision of him. And he's like, no, don't tell me whatever shit that is in store for me. I don't want to know. And then Galad's like, oh, I am a fancy pretty boy person who's going to save you, woman. Maybe I can get you into bed. And then Matt's just like, oh, take a day off, will you? Like, I thought it was hysterical. Like, that was a great line. But so then we get back to, you know, Matt is just like, okay, you know what? I just gotta go blow off some steam. I don't know if this is like his memories or if this is his, like, his actual skill with a quarterstaff.
I think it's his memories, right? Like, I don't think.
I think that's why
Nynaeve was so sort of shocked about it. I think this was Matt plus.
This was pulled directly from the book, and it is even more gratifying on screen than it was in writing. Nice. Because the theatrics of this were so much better. Like, Matt's just like, you know what? Fine. You know what? All right, dude. Like, I'm done. Or else what? Like, oh, leave. The woman wants to leave. I'm just, as a real quick aside, everybody has all these conversations in places they should not have them, even when they're trying to be secretive. Hey, I'm like 12 feet away. Leandrin? Oh, you mean the person who's not here anymore that was a part of a huge... No one else has been told anything about her, but... Anyway.
No, so, for yeah. sure. I mean, it's more of them kind of making some stupid decisions, but.
Yeah. So, but then he's like, oh my God, take a day off. And so then he says, you know what, fine. Or what? Oh, well, you know, we'll do, you know, we'll take you out. Oh, you, no way. Oh, you want to finally put this to the test? Again, this is something that I love because it is a book thing and they did not provide subtitles for it, or they did not provide a translation for it. As he goes to, as he finally says, hey, I'm going to go fight these guys. He says, Dovayande Setovia Sagan, which means time to roll the dice. And
that's his,
and that's his, yeah. like, that's his thing. Right. And that is, this is something I specifically went and bought like a needlepoint learner's kit so that I could sew this phrase in the old tongue on like on a pillow or on a little needlepoint thing. I haven't learned how to do it yet, but I have the needlepoint thing, and that is like my end goal is to like have that old tongue phrase, time to roll the dice, and like on a needlepoint.
Nice. You can do it. It's not very hard.
We'll see. But so anyway, like he you know takes on Galad and Gawain, and we were kind of talking about this before we recorded. Like I was just like I had to go back and watch this a couple times because it was so awesome for me. But like it starts off like solemn music, and then he like shows that he's got some skill.
Yeah.
And then when he starts to like, it's like oh now I'm gonna embrace how good I am with this. I'm not immediately getting my butt kicked. So then like it kind of goes from like that solemn tones to like an Irish drinking song,
yeah.
Instrumental drinking song. And it's just like something you would hear in a pub and you're like, oh, and here it comes. And then he hits Gwyn in the face, like knocks him out. And then he takes down Galad, which is as these entitled bastards. It was really nice to see, especially as much as they have messed with Matt, either willingly or like unknowingly, where they were having sex on either side of his room.
I was glad for Matt that he had a witness that Nynaeve was there, because it was such a good moment for him, like getting some of his ego restored after kind of being beaten down last episode. Not that he didn't deserve a little bit of a beating down, but these two were pretty insufferable. And so it was nice to see them put in their place and to see Matt, like, build himself back up a little bit and feel a little confident again. And I was just happy for him that at least, even though there wasn't the big crowd that the princes had the day before, like, that at least he had Nynaeve there to be impressed and awed at that performance. So...
Two marks.
Yeah.
Each. Which I thought was great.
Yeah. And so, you know, Nynaeve came to say goodbye to him, but then he ends up leaving with them. And I wondered if his excellent spearman performance is part of what Nynaeve was like, oh, well, maybe it wouldn't hurt to have him along. Like,
well, he very specifically, before he ever showed that, he's like, no, I'm coming. Like, that's... That's the way that it is.
I just wonder if she would have conceded.
Would have so accepted quickly. That, yeah. Right? Like, you know what? Hey, it's not the worst thing in the world to do this. Apparently, Nynaeve doesn't like ships. Is this the only way to get there? It's halfway across the world. I don't even know where we're going. All right, I guess we're going. And then Min followed them out, which, yeah. You know what? That's great.
I feel like Matt and Min belong together as a duo of sorts, and so I'm glad to see her following behind. Yep. I just think they could get into trouble together quite well.
Oh yes. Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and do Tanchico, and then we'll take a quick break. So Tanchico. Now, not a ton. We didn't see a ton, but there's enough to talk about and You know, I want to talk about Liandrin.
Yeah.
Liandrin. So the history that we get here is that, you know, she apparently grew up in Tanchico, where everyone wears veils, like everyone wears veils, men, women, doesn't matter who. And that there was this particular house where apparently it was passed on from father to son, where she was, I'm assuming, groomed and raped and married, sort of.
Feels like she kind of kept as like a slave, like a wife slave.
Yeah, like, yeah. So, and, you know, she was almost 13. So she was 12 years old when she found out that she was pregnant. So she was being raped well before, maybe not before she was 12, but my thought process is...
It sort of sounded like... Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So then she was down in that basement, you know, while she was pregnant. And then she was, you know, she had her baby. She was down there, you know, drawing in the chalk and salt. And you saw claw marks on the side of the wall. And to me, it seemed like those were from her hands.
Yeah.
But she comes on another ceremony of one of her husband's descendants, who is also marrying a child. Young girl. Yeah. And like, I was just like, damn. It was dark. And then she's just like, I was kind of like, you know what? All these people supporting it. You know what? I don't feel bad about the
Black guys that killed them. Liandrin was justified in what she did there.
I mean, she like literally ripped out his heart with the power.
Yeah.
And then she was like, don't hold back. Like, make them suffer. Like, oh, boy. Like that. And they didn't. They basically just, not just executed, but it seemed like painfully executed literally everyone in that room, except for the bride, who Naomi saved from whatever injuries she had and memories that she would be plagued with. So, you know, not the worst, you know, motive in the world.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, the enemy of our enemy is our friend.
Yeah.
Maybe not friend, but, you know, people, even if bad people do think bad things to bad people, like you kind of go, okay, you know, I can
understand. Sometimes I can accept that. And accept what Liandrin did here and support it.
But
can we just talk about like the styling of Liandrin in this episode? Like not just the veil they had her wearing, but I called it her unhinged hair, but you know, her hair was no longer neat. It was half braided, but then like frizzy and wild, and it really matched the energy that was going on this episode with what she was having to go through and you know, her sort of coming out as fully open as a Black Aja. I thought it was just like a cool piece of styling that really felt impactful to me and represented where she was at.
Her outfit, like her blood red outfit, was like, oh, this is where I wear my blood, my red outfit, so that I, you know, you can't see the blood stains.
Yeah.
I thought that all of the Black Aja's like fashion was all looked really cool.
For sure.
And then, you know, they obviously like only the ones who, and I believe that Tanchico is in the country of Terrabon, because I believe that Liandra is a Terrabiner.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's how I say the word. And common to that area in the books, like everybody has small braids in their hair, right? They're all their hairs are braided in very small braids, and so the braiding that you saw kind of made sense with
the custom tying to the book.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned it, you know, the first couple seasons, but Robert Jordan and eventually Brandon Sanderson were very, very vocal in all of their and detailed in their fashion descriptions, and that I think they have done an amazing job in the show to like show the differences between fashion in one place to another.
No, for sure. It's been very neat. It helps a lot too, like when you're not familiar with the people and stuff, that there's such distinct styles, right? Like you're going to know someone from the Aiel waist very distinctly, right? Yeah. It's cool.
Now, we will just go ahead and we only saw her in a couple scenes in the horrific wedding scene, another red wedding. And then we saw her drawing the symbol for her son. And then the last bit of that was her talking to Naomi or whoever the other black sister was in there. Yeah. And saying, yep, we're going to call her. Once we find the literally the exact same thing that Nynaeve said.
Yep.
Once I find this color, we're going to call her the Dragon Reborn. And Mugheadian is her servant or whatever. Yeah. Hey, be aware of where the servants are or who the servants are and why they're placed.
Oh my gosh.
Weird. That was that was literally mentioned like in this episode. I say weird. Obviously, it's not at all.
But just wild how many servants are actually spies.
Yeah, right. I think that covers all of Leandrin. But I do want to say, so my friend Kristen, she texted me. She was like, how am I possibly feeling bad for Leandrin? And I kind of like said everything that we just talked about. I was like, well, in the book, she's just a bad person. And we have zero context as to what she's doing and why she's doing it. And now, you know, and I listed all of the horrible things that happened to her. You know, it's hard not to sympathize with someone who has gone through that. And, I get it. But it's even worse that she had to watch this baby that she basically grew up with.
Yeah. Become an old man and die.
Exactly. Awful. Like, it's like your one companion over the years that was forced upon you. One of your bosses takes them out in a quote unquote act of pity. It's just, absolutely. I can see where you would go a little bit crazy as far as that goes.
For sure.
All right, so we want to take a quick break and then come back in and wrap up the points.
Sounds perfect.
All right, we'll be back in a minute.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Okay, and we are back. All right, so Veronica, your turn for the next point.
Yeah, let's go to the Two Rivers.
Okay. Sounds good.
I didn't love everything that happened at the Two Rivers. Like, I felt like it was, like, slow and sort of back and forth, and I would have just been happier if it moved along a little more quickly, maybe. But what I did really love was the opening scene that we got of Perrin in the tree stand. That is his family's burial ground, where we learn that they're buried with apple blossom seed in their hand. And I thought that was so beautiful. And so then you get this beautiful stand of apple blossom trees. And Perrin is there burying his wedding ring that split in episode 1 when he was fighting the flying axe, right? Like it came and split his ring. And so he's burying that at the tree that was growing from where his wife had been buried and that he hadn't seen. He wasn't even there for her burial. He left the Two Rivers before she was even buried. So that was the first time he'd seen her. her final resting spot and where he saw the tree that had grown from there. And I just thought in general that was like a really beautiful idea of these sort of trees growing out of all your loved ones' graves. And then we also, in that same scene, we got to understand what was going on a little bit more with Elena or Alana and the makeup that she has on her face under her eyes, which is a mix of the ashes of Yvonne mixed with water and clay. And she said that it's their custom to wear that on their face as a second skin until it really soaks in. And I think, like, metaphorically, right, the pain and loss really soaks in. I thought that was also a really beautiful, like, in addition to learning about parents' custom, I thought Elena's custom was also a really beautiful way to mourn. And she goes on to give a little bit of insight into what's going on with her and her and Maxim after the loss of Yvonne, and how, you know, she says, I wrote it down, sort of the difference between a couple of two and losing one, and the other person has to carry all that grief, but you sort of know your role in the grief, I guess, and you're navigating it the way that you need to. But when one of three departs, who owns that grief? And throughout the episode, we see again the struggle with her and Maxim sort of trying to find balance when they've lost who she acknowledges used to balance them. She said she and Maxim are fire, and Yvonne was the one who could sort of temper that fire. It reminded me a lot. I think it's a common, I mean, it's just a common thing that people grieve differently. And so anytime you are grieving one person together with another person, there can inherently be some struggle there because people grieve differently. And you can almost feel not only like, is there like the misunderstanding and the wanting the other person to understand how you're grieving, but there can also be frustration at the other person that they're not grieving the right way, which is what we saw Maxim sort of accusing Alana of. I think this is, you know, something we see probably more commonly than in this sort of throuple situation. It reminded me a lot of like when a couple loses a child and you see this sort of struggle. And so it was definitely like sad, but also like I thought really well done of the show to like, again, like this whole episode was a lot of grief, right? Like we just talked about Leandrin, and then now we have Perrin and Elena and Maxim. I think this show does grief quite frequently, and they do it quite well, like exploring pretty deep parts of grief, I think. So it was pretty neat.
No, I agree with you. I thought that I'm just going to stick with with Alana and Maxim, I mean, like the grief, like we saw Lan when he lost his brother, or not his brother, but like the fellow warder mm-hmm. who he thought he was going to save.
Yeah.
And then you saw Moiraine's face. And I think we talked about it that season, like the feeling that she could feel through the bond with Lan. It was just like both actors were phenomenal in that you could just imagine what was happening. And here you have that there, it was Moiraine feeling what Lan was feeling and almost like understanding it and embracing it and just like almost like echoing it. Mm-hmm. But where right here, this is like you talked about two parents, you know, potentially losing a child and then like one's not grieving enough and one's not grieving in the right way or whatever. Well, imagine your minds were linked and
yeah,
you could feel like you could sense that they couldn't like that. They didn't care enough that they couldn't. And it was just, it was very profound. And I think that's a really good comparison with the parents losing a child. Like I am a person who shuts down. Like when I grieve or when I am sad or whatever, like I am a person who shuts down. I put up walls, and I should. I put everything into a box, and I lock it, and I bury it, and I never talk about it ever again.
Which seems a little more like Alana, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
that she wants to compartmentalize it. She wants to accept it, and
hey,
she's wearing the grief on her face, but that's helping her not wear it inside, right?
And then Maxim is like, he's like, I can tell that you, like, I can feel you feeling nothing for Ivan, and her excuse is, well, that's because, like, basically they are echo chambers of each other's grief, and it's not like Moiraine and Lan, like, yes, Moiraine was sad and whatnot, but, like, she, like, it's like, hey, I can't embrace your grief because, like, I can't have my own grief because I'm overcome with yours. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm overcome. Like, I wake in the middle of the night, it's choking me. And I'm just like, oh, God, I can't even fathom that. Like, yeah, we should possibly mute the bond so that it, but it just sucks that, like, the water or the cold in the water versus fire. Now you've got two fires that are just flaming at each other, and there's no way to quench them at all. It was just really, really tough. Really, really tough.
Yeah. Tough, but also, like, I think kudos to the show.
Oh, yeah. And very well done.
Writing and stuff for kind of exploring all these different facets of grief.
Yeah. And then one thing about Layla's tree. Like, how long have they been gone? Like,
an apple blossom
seed grew from a seed into at least a sapling.
Yeah.
So it's been a year and a half. Like, how long have they not been? I feel like
that seems right because they had their first whole journey, like, got separated, went a whole bunch of different ways, found each other, then Rand went off and then was living in Kyrene for a very, like, a pretty, like, at least 6 months, I think.
Yeah, a significant amount of time, yeah.
Then they got back together. Then they, like, fought stuff. And, Egwene was held captive and had to go through all that training. Like, a lot of stuff did happen. Well, I was sitting there trying to think through it all. It probably had to be at least a year, a year and a half.
And thinking about it, Perrin had to go from Shienar, which is, like, you know, Illinois, whatever, to California in Thalm. Like, he had to travel that all that way on horseback. So that's months. I mean, and then and then you have the month long ship ride back from Thalm to Tar Valon.
Yeah.
And then God knows how long it's been now. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
Rand and company just crossed the spine of the world. So they, on foot, they crossed a mountain range. So.
Yeah. So, like, probably a couple more weeks on top of that.
Yeah. I guess a year, year and a half would make sense, I guess.
Yeah.
I agree that I would agree with everything that you said, and I really did like the, like, Maxim coming out at the end and just saying, Alana, why are we here? Like, what? And because that's the question I have is, why is Same. Alana there? All right. So yeah, those are, like, the whole grief aspect of it. But I completely agree with you. I thought it was very, very well done.
What else? I mean, the other things that happen there, the back and forth of will Perrin turn himself into the White Cloaks to save Matt's mother and sister? Will he not? Will the villagers support him? Will they not? Felt like a lot of back and forth. We got new characters. I don't really care about Lord Luke. I guess we're going to care about who originally introduced themselves as Mandarb and then Fael, I guess, is what she said at the end.
Yep.
But the young, or the, not young, but the somewhat small, petite woman that was with Lord Luke.
Yep.
Who says she's searching for the Horn of Valyr. So I'm assuming she's going to become important, but it just felt like a lot of, like, meet this person, meet this person. We don't know why they're here, but they're kind of in charge, but they're not. Like, I didn't love it.
So I'm going to talk about a couple of things that were important to me.
I was honestly kind of hoping that you might turn some of these parts around for me that I felt less enthralled with, because I just know it's probably lore that I don't know and I don't understand why it's important yet. So I'm just like, get to the point.
No, I hear you. I get you. I'm going to say that I did enjoy the, like, oh, you know, Mandarb is like my friend's horse. So you taking that name is pretty funny.
I thought he was going to say something, not his friend's horse. I think she thought that too.
Yeah. Watch your words carefully, or determine your next words carefully. But so we've got a couple of things here, right? So the White Cloaks are there, and they, kind of like we talked about last week or last episode, they are there because Two Rivers. And they went to the Two Rivers to find Perrin. So it wasn't like a mistake or whatever. It wasn't like, you know, they are definitively there to find Perrin. And to take him in and make him pay for the death of Jeffrey Bornhold. You see Dane, his son, and he's like, he looks rough. Like, he looks run down. He's like not shaved. Like, you look at the difference between him and Valda, and it's like, whoa, like, crazy. So basically he's like, hey, you know, Natty Cawthon's like, I'll die before you touch them. And my thought in my head, I was like, I mean, as you wish, like, okay, the questioners will get whatever answers, like, under duress doesn't exist for the questioners. Mm-hmm. I will say that, Valda has said, like, hey, he murdered your father in cold blood. Well, it wasn't really cold blood. It, like, you just didn't know what the context of his mindset was at that time. Again, I understand the White Cloak viewpoint of it. Hey, he just killed a wolf. That doesn't matter. Like, it's just an animal. But you don't understand that. And then I will say that I did think it was funny that Bane and Chied were like trying to get Loial to play Maiden's Kiss. And then, and they're like, oh, hey, Maxim, not going to happen. Like, it's the blood of the only man I've ever loved. And like, oh, that's heavy. All right. Well, we'll go find somebody else then. or the most significant interaction would be that final interaction between Fael and, mm-hmm. and Perrin. Is that a plan or hope or a hope? If you want to lead, then you need both. And he goes, I don't. And that led me back to the end of last episode where Matt was saying, I'm no hero. And Swan mm-hmm. says, the heroes that we talk about are, hey, I just do what I need to do. The people that I talk about aren't people who were heroic or whatever because they wanted to be heroic. They were just people who who did what they needed to do in order to protect their family, protect their friends, to do whatever it is that needed to happen. And the parallel between, hey, I don't want to lead, and in my head I hear somebody say somewhere, the best people to lead are ones who don't want to do it. The people who are best suited for power are the ones who don't want it. And so that made me go, we just talked about this. I did like a couple of things. So Sen Bui, the old man who was like, oh, just give him to the White Cloaks. And then, so I believe that it was the character's name, and they didn't like bring it up on the show or anything, but like, I believe her name is Dace Conger, and she is one of the women who was beating a Trolloc to death when back in like episode one on the attack on Beltane. Like, it's when the group of farm folk started pitchforking the Trollocs. She was one of the ones that was like, oh,
perfect.
Oh, you don't want to mess with us. I thought that Perrin's reaction to, yes, I'm searching for the Horn of Valir, and his giggle or his chuckle at that. It's like, oh yeah, I've heard of it. That was pretty funny.
I have a picture of it in my pocket. My friend holding it.
Right. So the plan seems to be, hey, we're all going to fortify the two rivers. We're going to make the, like, half dozen or 20 houses in here. We're going to build more. We will turn this into a real town as opposed to a green, you know, surrounded by a half dozen buildings. All the farmers will pull together and we will make this a place to defend ourselves as opposed to a ripe for the picking.
Mm-hmm.
So I do not have anything to make you less upset or less frustrated by the lack of speed at this storyline, but
it's okay. That's been my constant complaint with Perrin, I think, because I do like him, and I think I, like, want to, like, see things happen for him, and I've been consistently frustrated, really since season one, with the pacing for advancing his storyline. But I get, like, we can't have everything all happen at once. Like, we've got, like you said, like, 20 characters going through major character developments. It's okay for Perrin's story to play out a little more slowly, but I'm just impatient.
I get it. I do. I do understand the frustration at the speed or lack thereof. You have anything else for Two Rivers?
That's it. So I think that takes us to
Aiel Waste.
Yeah.
All right. So again, not a ton happens. A couple of new characters, a couple of new, you know, almost like plot lines or connections or whatever. So the stuff that I have for this section is, like I said, it's not a ton, but so they. We learn some more about the Aiel. So we learn that water has been, you know, fought over and killed over more than gold in the waste. Water is more valuable than gold, and access to it is a big thing. Whomever killed the Tinkers, I don't know if they ever landed on an actual thing. If it was like it was a sword or it was a spear made to look like a sword and, oh, no, Aiel would do this over the Shido. So now we know there we have the Tardad clan and the Shido clan, which I'm assuming like they have a blood feud. Okay, well, I'm assuming that that means they will like fight each other the instant that we see each other.
I thought it was sort of silly that they were like, who could have done this? No Aiel would have possibly done this. Oh, wait, but there is that other group that has, like, a blood feud with them. Maybe it was them.
Yeah.
I just thought that was, like, okay, but we didn't, like, suggest that first.
So we haven't gotten a name for the Dreamwalker. Even in subtitles, it just says Dreamwalker. But we did get the, myself and Malayne are the only Dreamwalkers in the Tardad clan or in the Aiel or something like that. So we did get the chiefs and wise ones, right? Those seem to be the male and female leaders of the Aiel. The tinkers were killed, but the only thing more dishonorable than being a tinker is killing a tinker. It's dishonorable to not defend yourself, but it's even more dishonorable to kill someone who won't defend themselves.
Yeah.
Whomever this woman is telling Egwene, hey, you know, if you're getting bruises in Telaron Riyadh, like, that's not a dream. That's someone hurting you. And so whoever that is alive. And so I feel like if she tells Moiraine that, like, Moiraine would be like, oh, yeah, Lanfear is, like, really skilled in the dream world. And maybe Rand's still meeting with her in his dreams or whatever. And like, if we only talk to each other, maybe we'll find that some stuff out.
Crazy.
And then we talk about Ruidian. And we've heard about Ruidian, but it is where wise ones and clan chiefs go to, like, become accepted or face whatever trials they have.
Mm-hmm.
Land being super uncomfortable in the sweat tent. That was really, really funny. He's like, oh, my God, every time they do this, jeez. I'm adding, and then like the one wise one, the other vocal wise one, like looks at them and like dumps more water on the rocks. She's just like, oh, eat it, girl, yep. Child. I mean, she called her child. She called Moiraine child. Like Moiraine's in her hundreds or something. And the two most significant interactions that we got, Rand and Lanfear, and I think this is what the Amazon description was talking about, Lanfear playing at a dangerous game, talking about murdering the Dark One, that, hey, with Kalendor, a male channeling through Kalendor, and a female channeling through whatever this Sangreal is, I wrote it down as the Sakarnan, if they could possibly destroy the Dark One, and that way I would be free with my dark oaths. And, oh, but no, I shouldn't have said anything. I think she's learning from the idea that Rand, if she like pushes for something, Rand won't do it. But if it comes out and, oh no, I shouldn't have said something about it, maybe he would like put that in his head and let it seed its way. Seeds of shadow.
She's also, I feel like, taking advantage of his naivete of, like, that he'll believe that her end goal is really just she wants to be free to just be with him, you know? Like, it almost seems like he didn't question that enough, you know?
Yeah, no, I get that. And then I will say the other one that we, the other significant interaction we got was towards the end, Melindra. The wise one, who I'm just going to be very misogynistic and I'm going to say we saw her first boobs. so Melindra, the wise one, apparently had the golden crane of Malkier tattooed on her back, which makes me wonder, because she was only a child when that, you know, when it was overgrown by the blight. And it makes me wonder, does Lan also have the golden crane of Malkier on his back? I feel like we've seen him without a shirt on. And
I don't think he does.
So, like,
we've seen him without a shirt.
It just makes me wonder, oh, you don't have tattoos. Well, does that mean that every Malkier person did, even young children? Maybe she did it because it was important to her. Like, I just... If you were basically raised... Yeah, maybe she
got it later.
Yeah, maybe she was like raised as an Aiel, that, oh, yeah, Aiel don't have tattoos. But, oh, wait, I don't want to remember... I don't want to forget where I came from, so I'll put this picture on my back that I never see to remind me of where I come from. But, you know, one of the things she said was, I would break my spears today, which makes me think that she is a maiden of the spear. Maybe she's a wise one. Maybe she's a maiden of the spear. Maybe they're the same thing. I don't know. But I would break my spears today if you raised the flag. You wear your father's sword. Have you forgotten your mention? And then she called him something to the effect of Onalanalean or something like that. and I know that that is like his title, but I like his like old tongue title, but I cannot for the life of me remember what that means. And I decided not to Google stuff. I'm just relying on whatever faulted knowledge is in my head. when I'm pulling this out of.
I thought it was interesting. They've really been revving up this season, like reminding us that Lan is of a royal line.
Yep.
Because they mentioned it when he went and got his sword. They mentioned it when he gave the ring to Nynaeve. And now we've got this again. And I guess now, you know, having those conversations with Nynaeve about it 2 episodes ago, I think was an important setup for this happening. Because if this had happened just now, I would have been like, wait, what? I would have kind of forgotten as a non-book reader that there was sort of this whole important history for Lan.
Well, it's funny.
In my mind, he's just the impressive warder for Moiraine, right? You forget that he has this whole independent storyline.
It's funny. Like, we say, oh, well, if that hadn't happened, to me, that's just good writing. Like, that's just good
Right. No, I mean, I assumed it was intentional.
No, yeah, and I don't mean to. It's just like that. You're right, and I think that in a poorly written show, this something might just come out of nowhere and be like, "Oh wait, yeah, they mentioned that two seasons ago, and we were supposed to remember to." You know, and but then as you are like hearing it, when it happens, like i.e. the conversation with Nynaeve and the ring and all that, like as you're watching it, you're not like, this is leading up to something else. You're just like, yeah,
they didn't like, it's not like there was a bunch of exposition about it. Like it fit. It didn't stick out to me that this was a big reminder, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, hey, remember this thing that we talked about back in the day? Like, no, they made it really, really organic, or at least I feel it was really, really organic. And I like it. And again, maybe you don't notice it as a casual watcher of the show, but it's much appreciated for people like us who really kind of dig deep into this stuff and try to appreciate what they're trying to tell us, what they're trying to hint at, and what, you know, all of the things are.
For sure.
But that's all I had in the IO waste.
Yeah, I think that got everything for me too.
Okay, so man, that finishes our points. And I think that I actually have any notes.
Me neither. My notes are completely highlighted and crossed out.
All right. So let's go ahead and move on to feedback.
Yeah.
So we had a couple on our Facebook post. We don't know what the next episode's called, so I can't like put a post up for it. But I'm gonna be like episode 4, episode 5, whatever. And hopefully we'll get a little bit more feedback. We did get a couple of comments. You want to take that first one?
Yeah. So we heard from our good friend Sam Lowe, who said, Lord Gabriel is a Forsaken. I legit gasped at the reveal in episode 3. And he manipulates minds. That's why Leanne didn't remember his name in the episode before. He had to work his compulsion on her. What? So basically I had the exact same reaction as Sam. The Forsaken are easily the most fascinating new characters for me. I do miss Ishmael.
I can see that. Like the Forsaken are very, especially because we only get little hints. Right?
I just want to know what they all can do. Like each of them, like their powers are scary and impressive, and I want to understand all of them. She goes on to say, Leandrin's return home was interesting. Her origin was heartbreaking to hear and also made so much sense. She is such a complex character. So, yeah, I think we definitely agree with that.
100%. Like it is. I think they're doing an excellent job filling in maybe holes from the book that you didn't get that aspect. But I think that they're really doing a good job at making practically everybody a complex character who, especially people who do bad things, right?
Yeah.
It's never hard to root for the good guy that does all the right things and you just want to win. It's hard to make an argument for someone who does horrible things. And those are the most fun characters to, maybe fun's not the right word, but those are the most interesting characters to have empathy for or to fight empathy for.
For sure.
All right, we added one more comment from Lilani Bales. I've only watched the first two so far, but I'm loving the way they've translated so many book elements into something new and different that somehow captures the essence of the books. I absolutely agree, Lilani. Ravin is so interesting here. And Ravin, as a reminder, is Gabriel. So, yes, I agree. One of the things that I think I want to know is, what are each of, like, we understand that Lanfear basically can't die. She has, like, black stuff coming over her eyes, and she feels about, like, Ravin is apparently very, very good with compulsion. Mulcidion may be the weakest of them in the power, but she's super, super sneaky. And she can apparently create, like, suck souls from bodies and, you know, make Greymen. It makes me wonder what else she can create. If she can do that. And so, yeah, I completely agree. But thanks for giving us feedback. I will put up a post for the for episode 4 and then coming episodes a little bit further in advance, so we can actually
Now that we're going week by week, it should be easier.
Yeah, it should be a little bit easier. But beyond that, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everybody, and I appreciate you guys taking the time to like. I feel like this is going to end up being been like 6 hours of the first three episodes. Like you said, Veronica, it's so dense. There's so much going on, even with slow storylines. If you'd like to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email it to talk@podcastica.com.
And you can check out our Facebook page and jump in the conversation there if you visit facebook.com/podcastica.
Next time on this podcast, The Wheel of Time, Season 3, Episode 4, no title known. I went looking for it. I tried. I could not find it. It is pretty wicked. And then I'm hoping to have news in here next time. This weekend, we just wanted to get all three episodes out of the way, get them podcasted on. And so we'll have a little bit more news. And if we aren't already talking for an hour and 45 minutes, then we will include some of it. But whatever feedback we get, we will definitely include.
Awesome. Well, all right. That's our show.
Let the dragon red again on the winds of time.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.